Scorebook Live Today podcast, a podcast about high school sports in the state of Washington. It's week 10 of the high school football season. Basketball is on the horizon, and I'm joined in person by Todd Millis, Dan Dickow here in Federal Way. How you guys doing?
I am great. I don't know about Todd. I'm great just because basketball season is literally here at all levels. High school media days, we've wrapped them up. Looking forward to that. College basketball regular season kicks off tomorrow. So things are good for me, but they're probably even better for Todd because he's only got a 20-minute drive home today, being on the west side as opposed to if he were joining us in person either in Vancouver or Spokane.
Hey, man, I've made half the media day, so I feel like I'm a warrior. No, basketball here starts 2 weeks from today, practices. Hey, I was at a Kinko 4A league championship game last Thursday when it was about 29 degrees, so I'm ready for to get indoors and watch a little basketball.
We've had pretty good weather, all things considered.
We have.
Last Friday was a great weather night down in Camas, at least on my end. Can't speak for your game, but we're here at Federal Way, the Marriott Courtyard, where we just concluded our final media day of the basketball preseason. We had teams from the SPSL, NPSL, Greater Tacoma area here, and it really kind of concluded what's been a successful set of media days across the state of Washington, checking off, you know, what feels like each corner of the state. What's been your guys' impression of how they've been doing, and is there maybe a moment that stands out to you, maybe off mic, that people might not see when we start to release everything?
Well, I think it's been very well received by coaches across the state that we've reached out to and asked if they wanted to be a part. I think if you look at the total number, we've got about 60 coaches interviews, maybe 80, 85 player interviews. And it's been good because we've hit all different classifications and many different pockets of programs across the state. You know, and one of the things that many coaches continue to mention is, hey, we appreciate the ability to promote our kids in such a positive platform and in a way that hasn't been done before, which, quite frankly, that's what we're about here at Scorebook Live. We want to do that. We've got a lot of new ideas that we're going to be rolling out in basketball season, and we're starting to already game plan for next year because we think we can grow on this idea because of the response from the coaches. So it's been good. I think, you know, maybe the one coach that stood out or maybe the one program that stood out would have been Union down in Vancouver. And the reason why is, you know, Coach Blake Conley, I asked him about, you know, them being 22-0 and then hitting a rough patch. He just was honest. He said, hey, they played their best basketball earlier in the year. And then the chance to sit with their backcourt guys, Tanner Toulson and Brad Lackey, you know, those guys, you know, understand and know what it means to play for Union because of the program that's been built over the last 10, 12 years.
I remember when they lost in the Tacoma Dome last season. I think it was to Kentridge. But just, you know, part of our job that's not fun is having to, you know, go and talk to the players after what is, you know, a devastating loss like that. And I remember seeing all those guys walk off the court and seeing a few faces that we saw at Media Day, guys who are coming back this season with a vengeance. So it'll be exciting to see those guys play.
It's weird. We're 2 weeks away from the first day of practice. It's kind of fun to see players and coaches before the season starts. So they're wearing their hair a little lower. You know, they're a lot more relaxed until, you know, it gets fired up and then they get in sort of basketball mode. But the one phrase that I've heard most often from the coaches is, this is so cool. And, you know, this is it's taken right out of the kind of the college mold or the NBA mold. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of this stuff that's, you know, there's a lot of different things that the players are asked to do in filling out questionnaires and the kind of questions that they're answering on tape. I think it's the variety of it. It's been fun. It's not just showing up for a 2-minute interview and leaving. They're doing it's kind of a 4 or 5 pronged process. And I think it's been fun to see the coaches and the players enjoy themselves. And a few of the coaches said, I don't think my players really understood what they were doing or what we were really going to. And, but I think once they've kind of gone through and done the questions and the rapid fire with you, Dan, I think they sort of said, oh, yeah, this is pretty cool, and I hope to kind of see this grow from the first year.
Yeah, no question. Todd, do you have a moment that stands out to you from either media day?
Yeah, you know, being a Tacoma guy, I watched a lot of 4ASBSL games last year. It was a really good league with Curtis, Puyallup, Olympia, Sumner, some really good teams that did pretty well at the Dome. And so I just assumed, you know, when Scott and Kobe Campbell came in from Puyallup today, I just assumed that Kobe Campbell was named after Kobe Bryant. I think everybody did, you know. And, you know, he's got that Kobe little, you know, that little flicker in his eye at the end of the game, a little, you know. And so I realized it had nothing to do with Kobe Bryant, that his dad said that when it came to kind of naming children, he was a former soccer player and he named him after Kobe Jones, the really good national team member a few years ago. So that, I won't visualize Kobe Bryant anymore when I see Kobe Campbell on court. So.
Right on, right on. I think if I had to choose one moment, I'll make it a two-prong. This might come, we might release this, I'm sure, at some point if we haven't already. But the final moment of the Southwest Washington Media Day was when Kyle Gruhler was being interviewed.
Yes, that was a great one.
Dan was doing the rapid fire with him, which is always great. I don't know that I'd do as well as some of these players have done on the spot. And Kyle's a shining example of that. He's... I think it was the last question was, describe your coach in three words. And, well, of course, Kyle's coach is Matt Gruhler, his dad, who is standing right behind Gray, our video producer, looking at him. And he said, with no hesitation, three words to describe him. He said, big bald guy. And that got a resounding laugh in the room. And very well well handled by Kyle. So that was a pretty good one. But I liked what Theo McKaylee at Hudson's Bay said.
Absolutely.
I thought he was really insightful. You know, it's especially when, you know, Todd and I cover, and we all cover the state at large, and you kind of gravitate towards the programs that are winning the most just because that's the most compelling story, typically. But what Theo said really kind of, I think, drove home the importance of high school athletics. And he's like, you know, it's not, at the end of the day, yeah, like we see, especially they see their girls program on the rise. Yeah, that, you know, that lights a fire under us. But at the end of the day, it's not, you know, he's like, I don't do this for the wins and losses. It's about more than that. It's about connecting with players. It's about growing as young men. And I really appreciated that insight.
The most impressive thing today was seeing Dan Dicko back Tim Kelly down with a bunch of tech questions on the rapid fire. He didn't bring a player, so he was in the hot seat at asking rapid fire. And yeah, as everybody knows, Tim Kelly is one of the best defensive minds, coaching minds in the state of Washington, and likes to apply a lot of pressure. It was fun to see the pressure kind of be applied to him today.
That was, and you're right. He didn't bring a player. Unfortunately, none of his guys could make it, and so we put him in that hot seat. And he made a comment along the lines of he wasn't great with technology, so I just kept right on the technology thought process with the questions. And, yeah, sometimes coaches need to be on a hot seat too.
Amen.
No question. So – the top story, I think we can all agree, coming out of last week, week 9 of the high school football season, a week where, you know, a lot's on the line. It's the last week of the regular season for most teams. We were at games last week, and there's, you know, plenty of storylines around the state. But something that came across, at least my Twitter timeline, is how I think, or you might have sent it to me, Todd, is Brennan Nixon, quarterback at Fife. Late in Fife's, I believe it was a district playoff game. They have their little
2ASBSL crossover game.
Sure, it was the crossover game. Late in the game, their starting quarterback goes down with an apparent shoulder injury, and you know, head coach looks over and calls on his backup quarterback. Well, his backup quarterback's Brennan Nixon. She's a junior, and she's been in Fife's program since third, fourth grade, since you can start, ever since at the earliest age you can strap on pads. That's how long she's been in that program. Well, she came in and threw just a dime of a touchdown pass, and it was the first girl to ever throw a touchdown pass in Fife school history. Still remains to be seen, and I hope to track down at least some folks who might know if it's the first girl to throw a touchdown in Washington State history. But really fascinating story. And Todd, you turned around and talked to Fife quickly after that about how that came to be.
Yeah, I did. Like you said, Andy, you know, she's been in that youth program since the third, fourth grade, has been running the wing tee offense since the fifth grade. It's a very intricate offense for a quarterback. You're not just handing the ball over. You have to sell fakes. You can run the waggle, play action pass. But she's been doing it. She's very, very respected in that locker room. Kent Nevin, the coach, was telling me that when it's time, when a practice is done or the game is done, you know, a troop of players comes out and makes sure that locker room is clear, so she can go, you know, do her thing, dress, take a shower, or whatnot, so nobody's, you know, no funny business. So that team has her back. Those players have her back. And I think it wasn't a moment of hesitation. It wasn't a moment of trepidation. It was a moment of celebration, talking to Kent, that when she got in the game, her teammates really rallied to her. And she threw a pass attempt that fell incomplete on that first drive. And then, like you said, she the throw, you have to see the video. We have it posted on Scorebook Live. It's all over Twitter. You know, that she has pressure in her face, a defensive lineman in her face on a rollout pass, and she throws an absolute high-arcing dime over the right shoulder of the receiver at 20-yard touchdown against really good coverage. And it was one of the more remarkable things I've seen. And obviously that's been a big story coming out of the weekend. There's a chance that she might start this weekend if their starting quarterback can't go. So, you know, And in my sports writing career, I'm sure you've seen it as a longtime athlete and down in Oregon as well. I've seen things where, you know, a girl in the state wrestling tournament, wrestling boys before, placing at Mat Classic, or I've been at a boxing match where girls have boxed against boys, but it's always had sort of an adversarial feel to it. This was none of that. So it was a much different feeling, much different vibe. Talking to the coach, and you were at practice today. I'm sure you probably can echo that sentiment as well.
Well, it's a non-story for them. I mean, this is just them putting in their backup quarterback, and then the next day, their AD and their head coach their phone starting to blow up from TV stations. I was out of practice today while you guys were hard at work here, and three TV stations were there. You know, the News Tribune called over the weekend. This is something that they didn't anticipate it picking up to this degree. Just because, you know, for them, again, it's a non-story. This is, well, obviously we're going to put our backup quarterback in, and obviously we trust our backup quarterback, knows the system like the back of her hand, to execute. So it was just really fascinating. I'm working on a story, a follow-up on what Todd wrote. Just her last 4 days have been, she took a red eye after the game. She's a competitive lacrosse player. She plays with a team based out of Seattle, Club Lacrosse, that plays nationally. She hopes to play in college. She took a red eye to Chicago, played in a lacrosse tournament in Chicago over the weekend, and it was, I think, named the MVP of that tournament.
Wow.
Flew back first thing this morning and showed up a couple periods late to school. And she had one normal class, she said, and then fourth period, I think it was, she started to get called out of class, and all day she's getting called out of class for interviews. And
wow.
So she has the folks, you know, lining up the schools, telling her, hey, can I get your autograph? Can I get just, you know, friends, people at school, joking that, you know, she's now this viral sensation, essentially, and it's a really precarious, weird, I'm sure, situation for, you know, a 16, 17-year-old to be in.
Well, I think, you know, the interesting sport you mentioned there is lacrosse, and I think the spacing in lacrosse is something that would lend her to be good in football as a quarterback, because Todd, you said she threw it over the right shoulder. So if you're throwing her over the receiver's right shoulder with pressure coming, you've got to understand spacing and a defender closing the gap, and then the arc to put on the ball and anticipation of the route the receiver's running. You know, so it shows the athletic abilities that she has in her quote-unquote main sport, lacrosse, has translated at least creativity-wise to football as a backup quarterback.
And if you guys are college lacrosse coaches and you're recruiting a goalie, and you just so happen to see that this person was a quarterback in high school, I can't imagine that hurts.
Tough.
Yeah.
Willing to stick your nose in there and play a really tough sport.
After the break, Todd and I are going to break down the top storylines heading into Week 10, the regional round of the high school football playoffs.
Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. Head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch.
The regular season is over for Washington High School football. The regional round is upon us. It's Week 10. Todd Millis is on the line, and we are just gearing up for a Week 10 that has, you know, a ton of postseason implications, a ton of playoff implications. We have a bunch of loser outs, and there's some games that should be pretty good this week. Todd, first off, thanks for joining me, and happy Week 10. We'll start there.
Yeah, happy Week 10 to you too, pal.
So I'm wondering, I guess we were kind of talking before we started recording, and at the time we're recording this, we don't exactly know where we're going to be. There's a few matchups that are that, you know, I'd like to be in more place at once for sure. But when we're talking about upsets just this week, are there any games that pop out to you as the most upset worthy? And I'll say that with the caveat that on scorebooklive.com/Washington, we previewed six games that we find the most compelling.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a number of teams, and it, you know, there's going to be some competitive games, and we can talk about that here in a minute. But in terms of the public perception and what would be an upset, I think if, for example, if Auburn Riverside is a team that was riddled with injuries last year, was sent down to the second division of the 4A North Puget Sound League. I think if you talk to most people in that league, they're a top three or top four team in that league overall. And unfortunately, you know, they won the second league, or they finished second in the second division and had to play for the seventh seed. That's a horrible break for Bothell, especially given the fact that, that we don't know what the status is for Christian Galvin. I saw him last week in the 4A King Cone Championship. He tried to give it a go with an ankle injury. Just couldn't do it. Maybe they were, you know, maybe they're kind of saving him for the stretch run where it's a do or die. I would expect for him to try and give it a go. If not, it puts a lot on Sermon at quarterback to make plays. And this is the last team that I think Bothell wants to come into to Pop Caney Stadium this Friday. A team that has three phenomenal physical athletes running the football. I mean, they want to get in their two back spread. They want to run right at you. They want to rotate. And Javon Ford, I think he's a name that people know about around the state. He's being recruited as both a safety and as a running back. You got Arthur Tuilaeli. He's a transfer from Alaska who played at Foster High School last year. And then you got Jaden Solis, who is their heart and soul at middle linebacker and a big guy that they kind of bring in to run downhill. I it's going to be an interesting contrast and an interesting challenge. It would not surprise me one bit if Auburn Riverside went up and made a really good game out of that 4A district matchup there at Pop Caney with the Kinko 4A champs. That's one game I think I've signaled as a potential upset around the state.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's prescient. You were just out at Auburn Riverside on the website right now, scorebooklive.com/Washington. You can find a story on the tailback trio powering the team into the postseason. I enjoyed reading that thoroughly, especially the quote describing Javon Ford as a Mercedes-Benz 600. That was that was nice. That's good ink.
Hey, you know, when their coach, he's kind of a sports car guy. He likes to do that stuff there in the summer, and he likes the hot rods. And for him to compare the three contrasting styles to hot rods was pretty funny.
Yeah, no question. So a game that I believe actually I'll be at on Saturday I can't really tell if this would be an upset. It's just more of going to be a really good game, and that's Mount Si Monroe. You have a Monroe team that had as tough of a first 3 weeks to the season as anyone, playing Eastlake, playing Woodinville, playing Lake Stevens. And, yeah, they came out 0-3, but they've won every game since, and definitively. I mean, the team has looked really, really good. You know, of course, Efton Chisholm, their top receiving target, Blake Rybar, hard-hitting running back, linebacker. I think Monroe is playing, you know, really good football at the right time, and they face a team like Mount Si that has challenged itself this season and has put together some impressive wins. But quarterback Clay Millen's going to have his hands full, no doubt. I mean, his top target, Colby Botten, goes down with a broken leg. He's lost for the season, so the injury bug hits Mount Si a bit. That game's going to be at Monroe High School, and I'm predicting a narrow Monroe win, but certainly one I'm looking forward to. Todd, when you look around the state, are there any more upsets or any more, you know, close games that that pop out to you that we might not have touched on even in our preview?
Yeah, I mean, you talked about wanting to be at different. We wish we could be kind of in different pockets of the state at the same time this time of year, and it's no exception this week. I mean, with some of these areas and some of these districts that have, you know, abbreviated, you know, amounts of state berths, you're going to have 4, 6, 8 really good teams going at one another in week 10. And I look at what's going to happen over with the GSL and the MCC crossover games. I mean, you know, me, Chiawana, two really good quarterbacks, and Ryan Blair, JP Zamora. Chiawana's obviously, their defense is fantastic.
Do you mind if I jump in and just share that quote that the Hanford coach said about Chiawana's defense?
Especially what I think is going to decide this game. I mean, I think the X factor is how this Chiawana defense. And tell our listeners exactly what Brett Jay from Hanford had told.
Yeah, so I talked to Brett Jay yesterday. That's as we record this Wednesday for a notebook item that you can read on scorebooklive.com/Washington right now. But I was just kind of talking to him about, you know, some of the other teams in the area, trying to really kind of determine how good the MCC and the GSL, those top teams will fare, how much they'll, you know, make an impact in the state playoffs. Because, you know, not many of them have come out to the West Side and played West Side teams. So it's something I've been curious about, but I asked Jay about Chiawana's defense, which is something that I kind of heard about from Scott Bigland at Kamiakin a couple weeks ago when those two teams played, and Chiawana held Kamiakin, a high-powered offense, to 7 points. He goes, "It's organized chaos, man. The box is literally a dance party or something. I'm not kidding you. All over the place, they're bringing it. You hope to get a head on a hat and pop one, but it hasn't happened many times this year." Well, it didn't happen for Hanford a whole lot when Chiawana shut them down. But I think that speaks to, you know, kind of what we can expect from Chiawana going forward is that they're going to throw teams off their game. You know, teams aren't going to necessarily know what's coming from a Chiawana defense that is kind of built on deception.
Well, yeah, and then you look at this particular matchup. I think if you talk to most people in the summer who the top two teams in Eastern Washington were in 4A, they would point to these two teams. Meade, they were the preseason GSL favorite.
Yeah.
They had all these guys coming back. Like we said, you know, Ryan Blair, you know, the Wiersma kids having a great year at receiver. I mean, they can really put up points in a hurry. The thing that surprised me with them is just they've been – their offense has been sort of inconsistent up until the last 4 weeks. When Benji Sonicson, their coach, basically said, hey, we're gonna ride that pass We're going to ride that passing attack all the way to the end. And if that means throwing it 40, 50 times, we're going to do it. I think Chiawana is probably best equipped with their athletes, especially in the secondary and their back seven, to best handle that in Eastern Washington. And they're playing in a district crossover game. That's because Meade's the number two team out of the GSL. That's how good the GSL was this year. I mean, there are four teams that could be playing this week, and only two got to advance, and that's Gonzaga Prep and Meade. Central Valley and Ferris certainly could be playing this week and certainly could be in the field next week in the state round of 16. So, but that's kind of the matchup I think that most people, not only in Eastern Washington, but around the state should be paying attention to. Two legitimate top 10, top 12 type teams facing off this early in the postseason. Now, there's another district too that I think we need to pay attention to. It's probably been the, you know, as good a 2A area league around the state, and that's the 2A Wesco Northwest Conference League. With, I mean, you look at those four teams. You look at Cedro Woolley, Linden, Archbishop, Murphy, Lakewood. Four really, really strong teams. They're in most people's top tens, all four of them. And then you throw Liberty of Issaquah in that district. That presents some really good, two really, really good 2A matchups up there with Archbishop Murphy, you know, squaring off with a team it faced 2 weeks ago in Cedro. And you're going to get two quarter, you know, it's interesting how these offenses started out as wing tees, as, you know, a few short months ago, and now they've sort of transformed or evolved into teams that want to throw the ball around. With, you know, you look at Cedro, you got Caden Plymail. He's had a really good ball, you know, pretty good year passing the ball with 1,570 yards, 18 touchdowns. And when you have a dynamic receiver that you can do a lot of things with in Brent Vanderween, if I were Dave Ward, I might open it up a little bit too. But Archbishop's done the same thing, and it helps when you have a 3-year starter in Victor Gabalas. They've sort of shied away and turned away from their wing tee roots and kind of, you know, 3-4 wides. It's an interesting matchup of two teams that faced each other 2 weeks ago. Only this week it's in Mill Creek. And then the other one I really, really am looking forward to is Lakewood and Jared Taylor, a guy that is a dual threat, loves to try and find ways to just kind of charge up the middle. He's a really good runner up the middle, a physical type playmaker, going against a team that, you know, you saw down in Vancouver last year in the state semifinals and was a whisker away of playing for a state championship in Liberty of Issaquah. And they return their quarterback too, who's also a dual threat in Sam Brown. So two really, really good games in week 10 up there in that district up north. So, and you mentioned the Monroe Mount Si game, and I also think that's kind of a pick 'em game. So there's some really good matchups there that that people should be paying attention to here.
I should have said this at the top, but the way that the regional round is structured is that these are all loser out games across every classification. And then on Sunday morning, in the second year of the WIA's installed seating committee, we'll meet at the WIA offices in Renton about 9 a.m. And noon at the latest, they expect to have the fields for the state playoffs all decided and ironed out. Now, this year, the seating committee is just a little bit different. It's more expanded. Last year, each committee was in charge of two classifications. This year, they've doubled the committees, the number of committees. So now there is one committee per classification. So who knows if that'll expedite the process. But something
and you want to tell people who those committees are made up of for people that don't know and maybe didn't pay attention last year.
Yeah, I can pull up the name. I mean, we wrote about it when it was announced. I believe that was in either May or June. But they're made up of athletic directors, coaches, a couple of folks who have the media designation, and, you know, people with you know, with direct knowledge of, you know, certain areas. They try to be representative of different areas across the state. So that's kind of what, you know, I mean, you've got, you know, John Eagle of Camas on the 4A. You've got Adam Matheson of Mountain View on the 3A. You know, you've got the AD out of, I believe, Kennewick is on the 3A as well. So I can link the full seating committee lists in the show notes, but these are people who, as a whole body, know high school football and are going to utilize, you know, kind of it, this is collaborative. This isn't just a bunch of people cast blind votes. This is, you know, they're having conversations about certain picks and certain decisions in the room. And so it kind of eliminates the error that was that's, you know, natural in a computer formatting system of these playoffs. So this is the second year, and last year, to be honest, I mean, the WIA folks say they're like, it was pretty seamless. We didn't really have we didn't have a ton of negative feedback, and that's, I think, because for the most part, the playoffs across the board were seated pretty well.
Yeah, some of these coaches that will be at the seating committee meetings on Sunday were guys that voted in our coaches poll at Scorebook Live for the 4A and 3A ranks.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And the one thing that I noticed this year, and just talking to coaches throughout the fall, is some of these coaches who are on the seating committees have really, if they didn't know, they've done a great job of informing themselves, researching other parts of the state, what's going on in different leagues, in the classification of which, they will participate in that meeting. So, guys that are taking this, and gals, if there are that are taking this this responsibility very, very seriously. I expect year two to be even better than year one in terms of honing in and breaking down the criteria and coming up with 16 really respectable seeds for each classification. Should be fun.
That's also, Todd, it's a really good point you made that these aren't folks on these committees who are, you know, just familiar with their area and the league around them and just, you know, their greater region. These are folks who are well connected throughout the state, even if, say, they haven't, because of their job as an athletic director or as a coach, if they haven't seen every team play in the state in person or seen, you know, kind of knocked off the greatest hits in each region. They have people they trust, just like we do, who have kept them informed every step of the way. And so this isn't just, you know, folks picking up week 10 and saying, oh, okay, well, here's the field. I'll just, you know, start to pay attention week 10. This has been a whole season thing. And so you have real experts who are involved here. One of the questions, though, that I have, and something that's just to me, I find the most interesting about folks in the room on Sunday, is the decisions that will be made to seed a playoff field. Some of them are subjective. You have, these committees have they met in August. There's kind of a general guideline as to how to go about approaching seeding, but then you have things like injuries. You have things like, you know, injuries from, say, a player was hurt early in the season, and that player, their team lost, and you can kind of point to that player's absence to kind of explain that loss. So you have those kind of examples, and then you have teams who have lost players for the season who, like your Camas, who lost a quarterback, Jake Blair, and Hawkinson, who lost wide receiver Peyton Brammer. You have, you know, teams that won't be the same team. They won't field the same team in the postseason as that they did in the regular season. So how are the voting members going to factor those in is going to be, you know, pretty interesting to find out.
Yeah, I mean, those are going to be some fascinating discussions. And you and I probably even in some regard agree and disagree on the impact of some of these, I call them X factor elements, injuries, how well a team is playing. I don't give
You know, yeah, like momentum. Yeah.
Yeah, momentum. But, I mean, week one losses. I don't put a whole lot of stock into opening week losses, especially for good teams like a Linden losing. You know, everybody wants to point to that loss and how it's going to impact their state seed. I honestly, you know, coming out, you don't have very many days in fall camp, and you're still trying to find yourself. And that week one, and those teams that play week one, tough week one matchups, who lose, I just don't put a whole lot of credence in week one losses, especially for teams with track records. So, I mean, there's so many things that these committees have to balance. You mentioned injuries, and it'll be some fascinating discussions. I'm very, 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 very curious to see what the state, you know, what the state seeding state seeds are. For some of these teams, that it could go, you know, 2 to 5 or 6. But let's let these teams win in week 10 first before we start talking about state playoffs. We got a whole nother layer to figure out here before those committee members meet Sunday morning.
Todd, do you want to do a podcast on Sunday? Do you want to record on Sunday and do a seating reaction? I'm putting you on the spot.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, if you give me as long to study what the seating committees come up with,
I'll give you like 30 seconds. It's just going to be, yeah, it's just going to be, you know, rapid fire.
Yeah, that's perfect. I rapid fire, I tend to put my foot in my mouth on. So I need a little time to figure out some of the matchups and some of the seeds, but no, yeah, I think listeners and viewers, I know there's a big event going on Sunday for soccer fans, the MLS Cup, about the same time. But I think high school football fans would certainly love to listen to some reaction, not just from us, but from around the state. So let's do it.
Scorebooklive.com/Washington is going to be your center for all things Washington high school football this weekend. And especially, I mean, going forward into the postseason as we really kick into gear. So tune in next week or Sunday or every week to the Scorebook Live Today podcast. The best way to do so is to subscribe. You can go to Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, anywhere you get your podcasts, you can find us. Hit subscribe for free and get new episodes automatically downloaded onto your mobile device. That's it for this week. We will talk to you soon. Thanks for joining us, Todd.